This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. When Hurricane Ian hit Florida in late September 2022, it took more than 100 lives, becoming the deadliest storm to hit the U.S. since Katrina in 2005. Hurricane Ian also caused the most damage in Florida, becoming the third costliest in the U.S. and resulting in massive loss of housing. In a state where developers were engaged in predatory behavior even before the storm, how have people been rebuilding in the intersection between climate change and disaster capitalism? To help me answer that question, I'm joined by Elena Novak, a non-binary organizer and writer from Florida. Their articles have been published on the HuffPost blog, Everyday Feminism, and in newspapers in Florida and North Carolina. After furthering their political education at Clark University in Worcester, they began a three-year stint as an organizer, helping lead behavioral health and environmental campaigns in Pinellas County, Florida. Elena's latest story was just published in Yes Magazine, entitled Pushing Back Against Disaster Capitalism in Florida. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Grateful to be here.
So first, let's talk about the extent of the damage in Hurricane Ian. It feels as though, given that climate change is so real and happening all the time, that we're losing track of storms and the damage unless we ourselves are in the thick of it. So for those of our audiences outside of Florida, give me a sense of how significant Hurricane Ian was to the state, to Lee County in particular.
Absolutely. You know, I think that this storm in particular, it was hard to imagine the scope of the damage, given that it been, for me personally, being from the area, many years since the last time a hurricane of that magnitude affected us so directly. And I wasn't living in the area at the time. I was living in Pinellas County, and I remember driving on 75 down to Cape Coral to visit my parents to help them, and just seeing scores and scores of relief trucks, you know, trucks of all kind, driving down to the area in order to reckon with the scope of the damage. One of the images that sort of became an example of the resilience of the area was the Sanibel Lighthouse. The only damage that it took was one of its legs being blown apart, but other than that, remained standing. And people took that as a symbol of, you know, we're still here. But that being said, Fort Myers Beach was absolutely devastated. That, you know, the leveling of the buildings in Fort Myers Beach was beyond the scope of what most of us, you know, would have imagined. The storm surge in Fort Myers Beach in particular was the highest in 150 years. And, you know, in Cape Coral, where my parents are from, where I was born, there are over 400 canals in Cape Coral, man-made canals, which, to put that in perspective, there are 150 in Venice, Italy, and it's known for its canals. So you can see how widespread they are. And those canals contributed to the storm surge that we saw in Cape Coral as well. The wind force blew water from those canals into people's homes, devastated their properties. That's what happened to my parents. And it was just an absolutely devastating hurricane for so many people.
How severely or how seriously had developers been changing the landscape in the affected area even before the storm? And then did the storm embolden them to become more predatory? Because whenever we talk about storms and storm damage, housing becomes the central issue, both of survival and sort of long-term safety, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And as we could see just from the scope of the stories that came out of the region after Hurricane Ian, there were scores and scores of people who had lived in precarious housing prior to the storm, lived in low income or rental units that were unsustainable prior to the storm. And so with the storm, either from the damage that occurred from Hurricane Ian, or just, you know, from the inability to rebuild and restore, you know, it was an opportunity that many developers seized on to come in and completely transform the landscape. But as you said, this was a problem that existed even before Hurricane Ian, with, you know, the example that I shared in my piece of Lee Interfaith for Empowerment, an organization that was bringing together 14 congregations across the county to do something about issues such as affordable housing. I mean, they won an affordable housing trust fund in January of 2022, just months before Hurricane Ian happened. And they, you know, were pushing for that, knowing that it was essential for people in the area making, you know, the area median income or below to have access to housing. And that, you know, that there was a great deal of pushback that they were getting from Fort Myers, from the city, from the council. But then after the storm, you know, the housing shortage was just staring them in the face, right? And so they knew that they had to do something about it. But, you know, the scope of what the crisis became was also informed by scores of people who came into Lee County during the pandemic, you know, driven by this boost of many people wanting to find more affordable housing from places like California or New York, where we can see that the affordable housing crisis is not just a Florida issue, right? It's a nationwide problem.
Right. So you have a perfect storm, terrible pun, but of high housing prices, more people than available housing stock, and then you have also predatory developers and climate change fueled storms, all of which makes housing inaccessible to ordinary people. So you mentioned this housing trust. First of all, give our audience a brief understanding of what a housing trust is and how it could potentially help, perhaps if better funded. You know, is it the kind of solution that we need in our era of devastation from capitalism and climate change?
Sure. Yeah. So an affordable housing trust fund, I think, is one solution to this problem that you know, I think that many communities have tried, many communities are looking to, and what they are a way for the city or the county, the government, to set aside a certain amount of money. And this money can be used as stipulated by whatever resolution or ordinance is put in place to support it. It has a set of rules that dictate how that money is to be utilized, right? And a lot of times what it becomes difficult with these affordable housing trust funds, once this money is set aside, is that you then have to find developers who are willing to create the affordable housing that the trust fund would subsidize. And there's a question in a difficulty there in incentivizing those developers to do so, right? And so, you know, as of August 1st of this year, the trust fund in Fort Myers had a balance of nearly $4 million, but there is still a great deal of effort to find developers willing to create the affordable housing that this money would support. And ideally, it would go to families making the area median income or less, right? You're talking about a four-family household or four-person household, rather, who maybe makes $80,000 a year and below, right? That kind of need. And so affordable housing trust funds are a solution, but I think there are others as well. For example, I think community land trusts are another really viable solution. And what's great about those is that, you know, oftentimes, rather than having to deal with the intermediary of a developer to create this affordable housing, land trust money goes directly to people who want to buy a home. They don't own the land, but they own the home, and that prevents housing that might be damaged property post a storm to prevent that property from entering the real estate market and then potentially being bought up by a developer who drives up the prices, right? So these are potential solutions to the problem. And I think that, you know, different communities, as highlighted in Lee County, they have their own, we have our own way of responding to this crisis. And that response may look different in a different place.
How important is it for community resilience to, you know, ahead of storms, resilience in the form of organizing and laying the groundwork so that when disaster strikes, people already have the relationships that are built to rely on one another? You write about the Immokalee Fair Housing Alliance, for example. Give me a sense of that long-term organizing that can, you know, strengthen communities, you know, defensively, if you will, or offensively even.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers is a great example, because they were laying the groundwork by building relationships pre-disaster to become, when disaster struck, a trusted resource for the community. And, you know, they were doing that by organizing farm workers in Immokalee, but not just farm workers. They were organizing by building alliances with members of the public, members of the communities outside of Immokalee, neighboring Lee County, where they are positioned in Collier County. And I think that because of those relationships that they had developed and the trust that they had incurred over time allowed them to really respond in a way that answered the needs that the community had at that time. Because, you know, oftentimes disaster relief that comes from outside sources like FEMA or the Red Cross might be delayed. It might not actually respond to the needs of the community at that time. But the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, you know, they were not as hard hit in Immokalee by Hurricane Ian. And so they stepped in to help their neighbors and were able to support them effectively.
So how can these lessons that you have outlined in your report for Yes Magazine, Pushing Back Against Disaster Capitalism in Florida, be applied elsewhere? Do you feel that what organizers and housing activists have been doing, have learned how to do in Florida, can form a basis for, you know, places like Maui that have just been hit by climate change fueled disasters?
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I think that that's sort of the key, right? Is that what works in Lee County may not work in Maui. And I think another thing to highlight is that, you know, the answer may not always be to rebuild. What if the answer is to relocate? And presently, there isn't a lot of comprehensive policy or funding on the part of the federal government to relocate communities that are bearing the brunt of climate change, who need potentially that solution, right? It could be one solution. But I think that, you know, as Lupe Gonzalo said, you know, a staff member from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, she highlighted the government has a responsibility here, but in the absence of their action, communities are going to determine what their own needs are and act upon them. And I think that we're seeing that in Maui. We're seeing that in places like Lee County. We're seeing the community advocating for what they need, if that is an affordable housing trust fund, if that is a moratorium on the sale of damaged property like the governor of Hawaii proposed in response to residents being concerned about the wave of developers coming in and creating this urgency and preying on people in their most vulnerable moment. I think that, you know, these answers have to be driven by the community, and we have to follow the leadership of the people who are most impacted by these problems.
Where is the next sort of leading edge, or what is left now in terms of looking forward in Florida? Because, you know, given that unfortunately, we're not doing enough to combat climate change, given that we're not doing enough to push back against predatory capitalism. And given the geography of Florida, it's inevitable, isn't it, that hurricanes and powerful, powerful storms and disasters are going to keep hitting communities there. What is the long-term thinking among organizers, as far as you know?
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, predictions are that in less than 100 years, so the lower third of our state is going to be completely underwater. And meanwhile, as I said, there's no comprehensive policy to address relocation as an option to stem the tide of development coming in. And you know, it's continued to be a struggle for many people in Lee County. I know of, you know, one congregation on Sanibel Island who's still holding their service out of the thrift store on their property because their sanctuary is still not repaired. I have right next to me the final insurance check that my parents were owed from their insurance company coming in over a year after the storm. And many are still waiting for their insurance checks to arrive if they ever come. And so I think that the long-term solution, you know, has to be organized people power. It's the only counterforce that we have against developers. I think the solution has to be, you know, as I said, you know, centering the leadership of those who are attending to what the community's needs are by coming up with their own solutions. The Fair Housing Alliance, the Immokalee Fair Housing Alliance being one example, as they are building hurricane resistant housing for farm workers in the Immokalee community. I think that, you know, whatever the solution is determined to be, it is not one that communities can face alone. And we have to come together to magnify what solutions are working in areas of our country where people are affected by climate change, magnify those solutions and identify if it is the right solution for our place and our need.
Right. Context matters so much, and I appreciate you emphasizing that. Elena, thank you so much for joining us. We'll link to your story in Yes Magazine from our website. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Elena Novak, a non-binary organizer and writer from Florida. Their articles have been published on the HuffPost blog, Everyday Feminism, and in newspapers in Florida and North Carolina. And their latest story, just published in Yes Magazine, is entitled Pushing Back Against Disaster Capitalism in Florida. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.